This is Audible.
It's me again, Hank the Cowdog. I just got some terrible news. There's been a murder on the ranch. I know I shouldn't blame myself. I mean, a dog is only a dog. He can't be everywhere at once. When I took this job as head of ranch security, I knew that I was only flesh and blood. Four legs, a tail, a couple of ears. Pretty nice kind of nose that the women really go for. Two bushels of hair and another half bushel of Mexican sandburrs. You add that all up and you don't get Superman. Just me, good old easygoing Hank, who works hard, tries to do his job, and gets very little cooperation from anyone else around here. I'm not complaining. I knew this wouldn't be an easy job. It took a special kind of dog. Strong, fearless, dedicated, and above all, smart. Obviously, Drover didn't fit. The job fell on my shoulders. It was my destiny. I couldn't escape the broom of history that swept through. Anyway, I took the job. Head of Ranch Security. Gee, I was proud of that title. Just the sound of it made my tail wag. But now this. A murder right under my nose. I know I shouldn't blame myself, but I do. I got the report this morning around dawn. I'd been up most of the night patrolling the northern perimeter of ranch headquarters. I'd heard some coyotes yapping up there, and I went up to check it out. I told Drover where I was going, and he came up lame all of a sudden. Said he needed to rest his right front leg. I went alone. Didn't find anything. The coyotes stayed out in the pasture. I figured there were two, maybe three of them. They yapped for a couple hours, making fun of me, calling me ugly names, and daring me to come out and fight. Well, you know me. I'm no dummy. There's a thin line between heroism and stupidity, and I try to stay on the south side of it. I didn't go out and fight, but I answered them bark for bark, yap for yap, name for name. The coyote hasn't been built who can out-yap Hank the Cowdog. A little before dawn, Loper, one of the cowboys on this outfit, stuck his head out the door and bellered, "Shut up that yapping, you idiot!" I guess he thought there was only one coyote out there. They kept it up, and I gave it back to him. Next time Loper came to the door, he was armed. He fired a gun into the air and squalled. Something about how a man couldn't sleep around here with all the dad dang noise. I agreed. Would you believe it? Them coyotes yipped louder than ever, and I had no choice but to give it back to them. Loper came back out on the porch and fired another shot. This one came so close to me that I heard the hum. Loper must have lost his bearings or something, so I barked louder than ever to give him my position and, you know, to let him know that I was out there protecting the ranch. The next bullet just darn near got me. I mean, I felt the wind of it as it went past. That was enough for me. I shut her down for the night. If Loper couldn't aim any better than that, he was liable to hurt somebody. I laid low for a while, hiding in the shelter belt, until I was sure the artillery had gone back to bed. Then I went down for a roll in the sewer, cleaned up, washed myself real good, came out feeling refreshed and ready to catch up on my sleep. Trotted down to the gas tanks and found Drover curled up in my favorite spot. I growled him off my gunny sack. "Beat it, son. Make way for the night patrol." He didn't want to move, so I went to sterner measures. Put some fangs on him. That moved him out, and he didn't show no signs of lameness either. I have an idea that where Drover is lamest is between his ears. I did my usual bedtime ritual of walking in a tight circle around my bed until I found just exactly the spot I wanted, and then I flopped down. Oh, that felt so good. I wiggled around and finally came to rest with all four paws sticking up in the air. I closed my eyes and had some wonderful twitching dreams about... Don't recall exactly the subject matter, but most likely they were about Beulah, the neighbor's collie. I dream about her a lot. What a woman! Makes my old heart pound just to think about her. Beautiful brown and white hair, big eyes, nose that tapers down to a point. Not quite as good as mine, but so what? And nice ears that flap when she runs. Only trouble is that she's crazy about a spotted bird dog. Without a doubt, the ugliest, dumbest, worthlessest cur I ever met. What could be uglier than a spotted, short-haired dog with a long, skinny tail? And what could be dumber or more worthless than a dog that goes around chasing birds? They call him Plato. I don't know why, except maybe because his eyes look like plates half the time. Empty plates. He don't know a cow from a sow, but do you think that makes him humble? No, sir. He thinks that bird chasing is hot stuff. What really hurts, though, is that Beulah seems to agree. Don't understand that woman, but I dream about her a lot. Anyway, where was I? Under the gas tanks, catching up on my sleep. All at once, Drover was right there beside me, jumping up and down and giving off that high-pitched squeal of his that kind of bores into your eardrums. You can't ignore him when he does that. Well, I throwed open one eye, kept the other one shut so that I could get some halfway sleep. Will you please shut up?
Hank! Oh, Hanky, it's just terrible. You wouldn't believe... Oh, my gosh, hurry and wake up. I've seen his tracks down by the creek. Get up before he escapes.
I throwed open the other eye, pushed myself up, and went nose to nose with the noisemaker. Quit hopping around. Quit making all that racket. Hold still and state your business.
Okay, Hank. All right, I'll try.
He tried and was none too successful, but he did get the message across.
Oh, Hank, there's been a killing right here on the ranch, and we slept through it.
Huh? I was coming awake by then, and the word killing sent a jolt clean out to the end of my tail. Who's been killed?
They hit the chicken house, Hank. I don't know how they got in, but they did bust it in there and killed one of those big leghorn hens. Killed her dead, Hank, and oh, the blood!
Well, that settled it. I had no choice but to go back on duty. A lot of dogs would have just turned over and gone back to sleep. But I take this stuff pretty serious. We trotted up to the chicken house, and Drover kept jumping up and down and talking.
I found some tracks down by the creek. I'm sure they belong to the killer, Hank. I'm just sure they do.
What kind of tracks?
Coyote.
We reached the chicken house, and sure enough, there was the hen lying on the ground. And she was still dead. I walked around the body, sniffing it good and checking the signs. I noticed the position of the body and memorized every detail. The hen was lying on her left side, pointing towards the northeast, with one foot out and the other one curled up under her wing. Her mouth was open, and it appeared to me that she had lost some tail feathers. I'm beginning to see the pattern.
What? Tell me, Hank. Who done it?
Not yet. Where'd you see them tracks? There weren't any tracks around the corpse. Ground was too hard. Drover took off in a run, and I followed him down into the brush along the creek. He stopped and pointed to some fresh tracks in the mud.
There they are, Hank, just where I found them. Are you proud of me?
I pushed him aside and studied the sign, looked it over real careful, sniffed it, gave it the full treatment. Then I raised up. Okay, I've got it now. It's all clear. Them's coon tracks, son, not coyote. I can tell by the scent. Coons must have attacked while I was out on patrol. They're sneaky. You gotta watch them every minute. Drover squinted at the tracks.
Are you sure those are coon tracks? They sure look like coyote to me.
You don't go by the look, son. You go by the smell. This nose of mine don't lie. If it says coon, you better believe there's a coon out at the end of them tracks. And I'm fixing a clean house on him. Stay behind me and don't get hurt. I threaded my way through the creek willows, over the sand, through the water. I never lost the scent. In the heat of a chase, all my senses come alive and point like a blazing arrow towards the enemy. In a way, I felt sorry for the coon, even though he'd committed a crime and become my mortal enemy. With me on his trail, the little guy just didn't have a chance. One of the disadvantages of being as big and deadly as I am is that you sometimes find yourself in sympathy with the other guy. But part of being head of ranch security is learning to ignore that kind of emotion. I mean, to hold down this job, you have to be cold and hard. The scent was getting stronger all the time, and it didn't smell exactly like any coon I'd come across before. All at once, I saw him. I stopped dead still and drove her. The dumb bunny ran right into me and almost had a heart attack. I guess he thought I was a giant coon or something. It's hard to say what he thinks. The coon was hiding in some bushes about 5 feet in front of me. I could hear him chewing on something, and that smell was real strong now.
What's that?
It's coon, what do you think? I glanced back at Drover. He was shaking with fear. You ready for some combat experience?
Yes.
All right, here's the plan. I'll jump him and try to get him behind the neck. You come in the second wave and take what you can. If you run away like you did last time, I'll sweep the corral with you and give you a whooping you won't forget. All right, let's move out. I crouched down and crept forward, every muscle in my highly conditioned body taut and ready for action. 5 feet, 4 feet, 3 feet, 2. I sprang through the air and hit right in the middle of the biggest porcupine I ever saw. It was kind of a short fight. Coming down, I seen them quills aimed up at me and tried to change course. Too late. I don't move so good in midair. I lit right in the middle of him and bam! He slapped me across the nose with his tail. Sure did hurt, too. Brought tears to my eyes. I hollered for Drover to launch the second wave, but he had disappeared. Porcupine took another shot at me, but I dodged. Tore up half an acre of brush and got the heck out of there. As I limped back up to the house on pincushion feet, my thoughts went back to the murder scene and the evidence I had committed to memory. It was clear now. The porcupine had nothing at all to do with the murder because porcupines don't eat anything but trees. Drover had found the first set of tracks he had come to and had started hollering about coyotes. I had been duped into believing the runt. Yes, it was all clear. I had no leads, no clues, no idea who had killed the hen. What I did have was a face full of porcupine quills, as well as several in my paws. I limped up to the yard gate. As you might expect, Drover was nowhere to be seen. I sat down beside the gate and waited for Loper to come out and remove the quills. A lot of dogs would have set up a howl and a moan. Not me. I figured that when a dog got to be head of ranch security, he ought to be able to stand some pain. It just went with the territory. So I waited and waited, and Loper didn't come out. Them quills were beginning to hurt. The end of my nose throbbed, felt like a balloon. Made me awful restless, but I didn't whine or howl. Pete the barn cat came along just then, had his tail stuck straight up in the air, and was rubbing along the fence, coming my way. He had his usual dumb cat expression, and I could hear him purring. He came closer. I glared at him. Scram, cat! He stopped, arched his back, and rubbed up against the fence.
What's that on your face?
Nothing you need to know about. He rubbed and purred, then reached up and sharpened his claws on a post.
You sure look funny with all those things sticking out of your nose.
You're gonna look funny if you don't run along and mind your own business. I'm not in the mood to take any of your trash right now. He grinned and kept coming. Started rubbing up against my leg. I decided to ignore him. Looked the other way and pretend he wasn't there. Sometimes that's the best way to handle a cat. Let him know that you won't allow him to get you stirred up. You have to be firm with cats. Give them the slightest encouragement, and they'll try to move in and take over. Pete rubbed and purred. I ignored him. Told myself he wasn't there. Then he brought that tail up and flicked it across the end of my nose. I curled my lip and growled. He looked up at me and did it again. It tickled my nose, made my eyes water. I had to sneeze. I tried to fight it back, but couldn't hold it. I gave a big sneeze, and them quills sent fire shooting through my nose. Kind of inflamed me, don't you see? And all at once, I lost my temper. I made a snap at him, but he was gone. Over the fence and into Sally Mae's yard, which is sort of off limits to us dogs. Even though Pete can come and go as he pleases, which ain't fair. With the fence between us, Pete knew he was safe. He throwed a hump into his back and hissed. And what was I supposed to do then? Sing him a lullaby? Talk about the weather? No, sir. I barked. I barked hard and loud, just to let the cat know that he couldn't get me stirred up. That door opened, and Loper stepped out on the porch. He was wearing jeans and had an undershirt, no hat and no boots, and he had a cup of coffee in his hand. Hank, leave the cat alone! I stopped and stared at him. Leave the cat alone? Pete grinned and walked off, purring and switching the tip of his tail back and forth. I could have killed him. I whined and wagged my tail and went over to the gate where Loper could see my nose. He looked up at the sky, took a drink of coffee, swatted a mosquito on his arm, looked up at the clouds again. I whined louder and jumped on the gate so that he couldn't miss seeing that old Hank, his loyal friend and protector of the ranch, had been wounded in the line of duty. Don't jump on the gate! He yawned and went back into the house. 20 minutes later, he came out again, dressed for the day's work. I had waited patiently. My nose was really pounding by this time, but I didn't complain. When he came out the gate, I jumped up to greet him. You know what he said? Hank, you stink! Have you been in the sewer again? And he walked on down to the corral. Didn't see the quills in my nose. At last he saw them. We were down at the corral. He shook his head and muttered, Hank, when are you going to learn about porcupines? How many times do we have to go through this? Drover never gets quills in his nose. Well, Drover was a little chicken, and Loper just didn't understand. Nobody understood. He got a pair of fencing pliers out of the saddle shed, threw a leg lock on me, and started pulling. It hurt. Oh, it hurt. Felt like he was pulling off my whole nose. But I took it without a whimper. Well, maybe I whimpered a little bit. And we got her done. Loper rubbed me behind the ears. There! Now you try to stay away from porcupines. He stood up and started dusting off his jeans when he noticed the wet spot. His eyes came up, and they looked kind of wrathful. Did you do that? I was well on my way to tall timber when he threw the pliers at me. I couldn't help it. I didn't do it on purpose. The quills just got to hurting so bad that I had to let something go. Was it my fault that he had me in a leg lock and got in the way? Make one little mistake around this ranch, and they'll nail you to the wall. I laid low for a while, hid in the post pile, and nursed my nose. It was about 10 o'clock when Sally Mae discovered the murdered hen.
I debated for a long time about what to do next. Should I hide out and play it safe, or go on down to the chicken house and get blamed for something that wasn't my fault? Curiosity got the best of me, and I trotted down to see what was going on. Drover was already there when I arrived, wagging his stub tail and trying to win a few points with his loyal dog routine. I walked up to him and said, out of the corner of my mouth, "Thanks for all the help this morning. I really appreciate it." I think he missed the note of irony because he said, and I mean with a straight face, he said,
"That's okay, Hanky. It wasn't nothing."
Dang right, it wasn't nothing. Loper was kneeling over the hen, studying the signs. Sally Mae stood nearby, looking mighty unhappy about the dead chicken. Loper pushed his hat to the back of his head and stood up. His eyes went straight to me and Drover. Only when I glanced around, I noticed that Drover had disappeared. It was just me standing in the spotlight. "Hank, if you hadn't been out barking all night, you might have prevented this. Why do you think we keep you around here?" I hung my head and tucked my tail. "Do you have any idea how much money it costs to keep you dogs around here? Seems that every time I turn around, I'm having to buy another 50-pound sack of dog food. That stuff's expensive." Maybe this ain't the time or place to argue the point, but just for the record, let me say that co-op dog food is the cheapest you can buy. I don't know what they make it out of. Holes, straw, sawdust, anything the pigs won't eat. And then they throw in a little grease to give it a so-called flavor. Tastes like soap, and about half the time it gives me an upset stomach. The point is, I wasn't exactly eating the ranch into bankruptcy. Thought I ought to throw that in to give a more balanced view of things. Loper went on. "We can't afford to keep you dogs around here if you're gonna let this sort of thing go on. Everybody has to earn his keep on this ranch. I don't want this to happen again." Well, what did he suppose I wanted? Sometimes I just don't... Oh, well. He picked up the dead chicken by the feet and carried it down to the trash barrel. I got to admit that I watched this with some interest, since it had occurred to me that there wasn't much any of us could do for the dead chicken. The more I thought about chicken dinner, the more my mouth watered. Couldn't get it off my mind. I like chicken about as well as any food you can name. Has a nice clean taste, except for the feathers. Feathers are pretty tasteless, if you ask me, and they kind of scrape when they go down. Sure was hungry for chicken, but I decided against it. Wouldn't look too good if I got caught eating the murder victim after all the trouble I'd gotten into that day. I tried to concentrate on the scene of the crime. I studied it again, went over the ground and sniffed it out. Nothing. No clues, no tracks, no scent. Could have been a coyote, a coon, a skunk, a badger, even a fox. But there was one thing I was sure of. It wouldn't happen again. Not while I was in charge of security. Not as long as I could still stand up and fight for the ranch. I saw Drover peek his head out of the machine shed. "Get some sleep, son. Tonight we throw up a double guard, and we could get ourselves into some combat." We slept till dark. When the moon came up, we went out on patrol, made several laps around headquarters. Everything was quiet. Off in the distance, we heard a few coyotes, but they weren't anywhere close. Must have been after midnight when Drover said his feet hurt. He wanted to rest a while. I left him in front of the chicken house and told him to sound the alarm if he saw anything unusual. I went on down and checked things out at the corral, made the circle around the place, and ended up back at the chicken house about half an hour later. Thought I'd drop in unannounced and check on Drover, make sure he was taking care of business. As I sneaked up, I could see him in the moonlight. His ears were perked. He'd take about two steps and pounce on something with his front paws. Then he'd take two more steps and pounce again.
He wasn't paying a lick of attention to the chicken house. A guy could have driven a truck in there, loaded up all the hens, and been gone before Drover ever got the news. I walked up behind him. What are you doing? He screeched and headed for the machine shed. I called him back. He came out, looking all around with big eyes.
Is that you, Hank?
Uh-huh. What were you doing?
Me? Oh, nothing.
It was then that I saw the toad frog jump. Playing with a toad frog? On guard duty? When we got a murderer running around loose? He hung his head and went to wagging that stub tail of his.
I got bored, Hank.
Sit down, son. Me and you need to have a serious talk. He sat down, and I marched back and forth in front of him. Drover, I'm really disappointed in you. When you came to this ranch, you said you wanted to be a cow dog. I had misgivings at the time. I mean, you didn't look like a cow dog. But I took you on anyway and tried to teach you the business. Can you imagine how it breaks my heart to come up here and find you playing with a dadgum toad frog? His head sank lower and lower, and he started to sniffle. If you had gone into any other line of work, playing with a frog would be all right. But a cow dog is something special. You might say that we're the elite. We have to be stronger, braver, and tougher than any brand of dog in the world. It's a special calling, Drover. It ain't for the common run of mutts. He started crying. Drover, there's only one thing that keeps you from being a good cow dog.
What is it, Hank?
You're worthless.
Oh, no! Don't say it. It hurts too much.
But it's true. I've tried to be patient. I've tried to teach you. I've tried to be a good example.
I know.
But it hasn't worked. You're just as worthless today as you were the first time I saw you.
Oh!
You're just a chicken-hearted little mutt, is what you are. And I don't think you'll ever make a cow dog.
Yes, I will, Hank. I just need some time.
Nope. Duty's duty. I got no choice but to let you go. He broke down and sobbed.
Oh, Hank, I got no place to go. No friends, no family. Nobody wants a chicken-hearted little mutt. Give me just 3 more chances.
Can't do it, Drover. Sorry.
2 more?
Nope.
1 more?
I paced back and forth. This was one of the most difficult decisions of my career, and I didn't want to rush into it. All right, 1 more chance, but 1 more dumb stunt, and you're finished. And I mean forever. Now dry your eyes, shape up, pay attention to your business, and concentrate on being unworthless.
Okay, Hank.
He started jumping up and down and going around in circles.
You won't be sorry. No more frogs for me. I'll guard that chicken house and give my life if necessary.
That's a spirit. I'm going to make the rounds again. If you see anything suspicious, give a holler. I started off on my rounds and left him sitting in front of the chicken house door. I was down at the feed room checking for coons when I heard him sound the alarm. I turned on my incredible speed and went tearing up the hill. I have several speeds, don't you see? Slow, normal, and incredible. I save the last one back for special emergencies. When I turn on the incredible speed, I appear as a streak of color moving across the ground. Anything that gets in my way is knocked aside, often destroyed. And I'm not talking about little stuff either. I mean trees, posts, big rocks, you name it. As I was streaking up the hill, I met Drover.
Hank! Oh, I seen him! He's up there! Oh my gosh!
I had to slow down. Give me a description.
Big, Hank. And I mean big! Huge, enormous, black and white, gigantic tail that whistles through the air, long pointed tongue that flicks out at you, and horns growing out of his head.
Good grief. What is it?
It's a monster, Hank. A genuine monster.
I stopped to think it over. I'd never tangled with a monster before. You think I can whip him?
I don't know, Hank, but if anybody can, it's you.
You're right. Okay, here's the plan. I'll go in the first wave, make the first contact. We'll hold you in reserve. If I holler for help, you come running. Get in there with them teeth of yours and bite something. Got that?
I got it.
And, Rover, if I don't come back from this one, you'll have to go on alone. Take care of the ranch and be brave. It was kind of a touching moment. Me and Drover standing there in the moonlight just before the big battle. I said goodbye and loped up the hill. I stopped and peered into the gloom. At first, I couldn't see anything. But then my eyes fell on a huge, shadowy thing standing right in front of the chicken house door. Drover hadn't exaggerated. It was a horned monster, all right, and he was fixing to bust down the door and start killing chickens. I didn't have a moment to waste. It was now or never, him or me, glory or death. I bared my fangs and attacked. The first contact was made only a matter of seconds after I launched the attack. The monster must have heard me coming, because he kicked the tar out of me and sent me rolling. I leaped up and charged him again, but this time I made it through, sank my teeth into him, and gave him a ferocious bite. He slung me around, but I hung on. He was big, all right, big as a house. I figured he stood, 14 feet tall at the shoulder, had three eyes, a long forked tongue, and a tail with deadly stingers on the end of it. Also horns that glowed in the dark, and tusks. Did I mention that? Big, long tusks growing out of the side of his mouth, the kind that could rip a dog to shreds. Green slobber dripped out of his mouth, and his eyes were red. It was a fight to the death. Come on, Drover! Attack! I set up a howl to alert the house. I would need all the help I could get. I'll give Drover credit. He came tearing out of the weeds, yapping at the top of his lungs, and got within 3 feet of the monster before he veered off and headed for the machine shed. The lights came on down at the house. The door slammed, and I heard Loper running towards me. I hoped he had the gun. I was getting beat up and tired. I wasn't sure I could keep up the fight much longer. The gun exploded, lit up the night. The monster ran, and I started after him, ready to give him the coup de grace, as we say, but Loper called me back. I figured he didn't want to risk losing the head of ranch security, which seemed pretty sensible to me. So I went back to him, limping on all four legs at once because they all hurt, and so did everything else. Wagging my tail, I went up to him, ready for my reward. I didn't get a reward. To make a long story short, Drover had sent me into battle against the milk cow, and I got cursed for it. I thought very seriously about terminating Drover. I mean his life, not his job. But I couldn't find him in the machine shed. So I dragged my battered carcass down to the gas tanks and curled up on my gunny sack bed. I could have sworn that was a monster. I slept late the next morning. To be real honest about it, I didn't wake up till sometime in the early afternoon. Guess all that monster fighting kind of wore me down. What woke me up was the sound of the flatbed pickup rattling up to the gas tank, right in front of my bedroom. Loper got out and started filling the pickup. He looked at me, gave his head a shake, and said something under his breath. I tried to read his lips, but couldn't make out what he said. Probably wasn't the Pledge of Allegiance. Slim went around to the front of the pickup and opened up the hood. I was just getting up, right in the middle of a nice big stretch, when I heard him say, "Hank, come here, boy." Gee, at last a friendly voice. How long had it been since someone had spoken to me in a kind voice? In my job, nobody ever says a word when you do something right. Only when you make a mistake, and then you hear plenty about it. I trotted around the front of the pickup, limped, actually, because I was pretty stove up from the battle, wagged my tail and said howdy. Slim bent down and rubbed me behind the ears. Good dog. Good dog? I just melted on those words, rolled over on my back, and kicked all four legs in the air. It's amazing what a few kind words and a smile can do for a dog, even as hard-boiled as I am, which is something you have to be in my line of work. I respond to kindness. Slim rubbed me in that special place at the bottom of my ribs, the one that's somehow hooked up to my back leg. I've never understood the mechanics of it, but if a guy scratches me there, it makes my back leg start kicking. Slim scratched and I kicked. Felt good and made old Slim laugh. Then he told me to sit. I sat and tried to shake hands. Shaking hands is one of the many tricks I've learned over the years, and I can usually count on it to delight an audience of people. But Slim didn't notice. He reached under the hood, pulled out the dipstick, and wiped it off on my ear. Good dog. And that was it. I waited around for some more scratching or handshaking, but he seemed to forget that I was there. He slammed the hood and stepped on my paw. Oops. Sorry, Hank. Get out of the way. The sweet moments in this life are fleeting. You have to enjoy them to the fullest when they come, before some noodle steps on you and tells you to get out of the way. Slim and Loper got into the pickup, and Loper said, "Don't you dogs try to follow us." He gunned the motor and pulled away from the gas tank. Drover suddenly appeared out of nowhere and hopped up into the back of the pickup.
"Come on, Hank, we're supposed to go."
In the back of my mind, I knew that wasn't right, but I didn't have time to think about it. I chased the pickup until it slowed down for the big hill in front of the house and jumped up in the back. "Where are we going?" Drover gave me that famous empty-headed look of his, the one where you can gaze into his eyes and see all the way to the end of his tail, and there's nothing in between.
"Beats me, but I bet we're going somewhere."
Loper drove up to the mailbox and turned left. If he'd turned right, it would have meant that we were going to the pasture. A left turn meant only one thing. We were going to town. And that meant only one thing. Loper was going to be mad as thunder when he found out we'd jumped in the back and hitched a ride. But what the heck? You can't be safe and cautious all the time. If you're too timid in this life, you'll miss out on all the fun and adventure. You'll just stay home and snap at the flies. And when you get to be an old dog, you'll look back on your life and think,
"All these years I've been on this earth, and all I ever done was snap at the flies."
And you'll regret that when the opportunity came up, you didn't sneak a ride into town. Drover curled up behind the cab and watched the scenery go by. I sat on my haunches, closed my eyes, and just let the wind flap my ears around. Felt good. Restful. There for a little while, I forgot all my cares and responsibilities. That lasted until we got to the highway. Loper pulled under the blacktop and started picking up speed. The wind began to sting, and my ears flapped a little harder than I like them to flap, and the crumbs of alfalfa hay on the pickup bed started to swirl. I laid down beside Drover. "Say, before I forget, I want to thank you for all the help you gave me last night with that monster." He gave me a shy grin.
"Oh, that's okay. It was the least I could do."
It sure as heck was. If you'd done any leaster, you'd have been fighting for the other side. The shy grin disappeared.
"You mad about something?"
"Forget it." I didn't want to talk. Alfalfa leaves were getting into my mouth. I slept all the way to town. Next thing I knew, we had slowed down and were coasting down Main Street. I sat up and took in the sights. Bunch of stores and streetlights, several stop signs, couple of town dogs loafing around, and a big tumbleweed rolling down the middle of the street. Loper drove into a parking place in front of the Waterhole Cafe. beside two or three other pickups that looked like cowboy rigs. When he got out and saw us back there, he gave us the tongue lashing I had expected. It was no worse than usual, not bad enough to make me regret that we'd hitched a ride to town. He told us to sit, be good, and don't bark. And then he and Slim went into the waterhole. For 5 or 10 minutes, we concentrated on being good, which was a real drag. Then I heard Drover say, "Psst." He jerked his head towards a pickup that was parked next to us. In the back end, fast asleep, was a big, ugly boxer dog. We both moved to the side of the pickup bed and stared at him. He must have felt our eyes because after a bit, his head came up and he glowered at us with a wicked expression on his face.
"What are you staring at?"
"Just looking at the sights. What's your name?"
"Puddin' Tane. Ask me again and I'll tell you the same."
I guess Drover didn't understand what that meant because he said, "What's your name?"
"John Brown. Ask me again and I'll knock you down."
Drover gave me a puzzled look and I said, "How come they've got you chained up?" He was tied to the headache racks of the pickup with a piece of chain.
"So I won't kill any dogs."
"You kill dogs? No fooling?"
"Just for drill. I prefer the bigger stuff."
That sort of ended the conversation. Puddin'-Tane went back to sleep, and I got involved with a couple of noisy flies that were bothering my ears. Took a few snaps at them, but didn't get anything. Next thing I knew, Drover said,
"What would you do if we peed on your tires?"
A boxer's head came up real slow, and he turned them wicked eyes on little Drover.
"What did you say?"
"I said, what would you do if we peed on your tires?"
Drover! It made me a little uneasy, the way he was talking about we. The boxer sat up.
"I'd tear off your legs and wring your neck."
"But how could you do that when you're chained up?"
"Drover!" The boxer lifted one side of his mouth and unveiled a set of long white teeth.
"I'd bust the chain."
"It looks pretty stout to me."
"Drover!"
"It ain't stout enough."
"Just curious."
Big and Ugly went back to sleep, and I got back to them flies. One of them was big and green, and also a little slow on the draw. I waited for my shot, and snap! Got the little booger. Then I had to spit him out real quick. Boy, did he taste foul. Seemed to me I heard water running somewhere. I glanced around and saw Big and Ugly's head come up. He'd heard it too. Drover had just wiped out the left rear tire and was going towards the front one. Seemed to me this was poor judgment on Drover's part. The boxer sprang to his feet.
"Get away from that tire, runt. No two-bit cow dog's gonna mess up my tires."
I didn't like his tone of voice. I got up and wandered to the side of the pickup. "Say there, partner, maybe I didn't hear you right. You weren't suggesting that there's any two-bit cow dogs around here, were you?"
"I ain't suggesting, buddy. I'm saying, you're a couple of two-bit cow dogs."
"Do you mean that as an insult or a compliment?"
"Cow dog don't mean but one thing to me. Sorry and two-bit."
"Oh, dear, Drover. The dust seems kind of bad all of a sudden. Why don't you wet down that other tire?" He grinned, hiked up his leg, and let her rip. The boxer went nuts when he saw that. All at once, his fangs were flashing in the sunlight. He lunged against the chain and started barking. Big, deep roar of a bark, so loud you could feel it bouncing off your face. I waited for him to shut up. "You want to take back what you said about cow dogs?" He lunged against the chain and slashed the air about 6 inches from the end of my nose. "I guess not." I hopped down, skipped around to the right side of the boxer's pickup, and wiped out the front and back tires. Driver and I met at the front, swapped sides, and gave each tire a second coat. Big and Ugly went berserk. He fought against the chain and roared,
"Let me at him. I'll kill him. Just let me at him."
Drover and I finished the job and hopped back into the pickup bed. When the cafe door burst open, we were fast asleep. Slim, Loper, and the boxer's master stormed out. "What's going on out here, you dogs?" "It's my dog, Loper. He's making all the racket." "Bruno, shut up. You're disturbing the whole town."
I sat up and opened my eyes.
Bruno was getting a good scolding from his master. He whined and wagged his stump tail and tried to explain what had happened. But his master didn't understand. This seems to be a common trait in masters. "Now you lie down and be quiet. I don't want to hear another peep out of you. You know better than that." The men went back inside. I waited a minute and then gave Drover the coast is clear sign. We got up and went over to the edge of the pickup. Bruno was lying flat, with his eyes wide open and a couple of fangs showing beneath his lips. He was trembling with rage. "Drover, you ever seen an uglier dog than that one?"
"No, I never did."
"Me neither. Can you imagine what his mother must have looked like?" A growl came from deep in Bruno's throat.
"I don't like his pointed ears."
"You know why they're pointed, don't you? When boxers are born, they have such big floppy ears that a surgeon has to cut off 2 yards of hide. And then they whack off the tail, and then they put the pup's face into a shop vise and mash it till it looks just like Bruno's."
"No kidding?"
"Yep. And as you might expect, it affects the brain, too. Mashes it down to the size of a dog biscuit." The growl in Bruno's throat was growing louder. "That's why boxers are so dumb. Brain's been smallered. It's a mark of the breed. They tell me you can't get papers on a boxer unless he's too dumb to walk across the street. They give him a test, see? And all the ones that flunk become registered boxers." By this time, the growl had become a steady roar. "And that's why you never see boxers working cattle. Just too frazzling dumb to hold down a steady job." Bruno's eyes were cloudy, as if they were filled with smoke from a fire burning inside. His teeth were snapping together. Maybe he was crushing imaginary bones.
"Why would anybody want a dog that was so big and dumb and ugly?"
"I've wondered about that myself, and the only answer I can come up with is that maybe if a guy had a piece of log chain that he didn't know what to do with, he'd buy a boxer to hang it on." That did it. Bruno erupted again and lunged at us, his mouth wide open and full of jagged teeth. I got a real good look at his tonsils, which appeared to be a little inflamed. I jerked my head at Drover, and we were both sending up a line of Z's when the cowboys came out again. "Bruno, what in the world? Bad dog, why can't you just lie still and shut up like these other dogs?" Bruno whimpered. "Well, I guess I'd better go. Bruno's on a snort. See y'all later." When the pickup drove off, me and Drover sat up and grinned and waved goodbye to our new friend. Bruno was so mad, his eyes were crossed and foam dripped off his chops. That's what makes being a cow dog worthwhile. Teamwork. When we crossed the cattle guard that put us back on the ranch, I felt a change come over me. In town, I'd been just another happy-go-lucky dog without a care in the world. But back on the ranch, I felt that same crushing sense of responsibility that's known to people in high places, such as presidents, prime ministers, emperors, and such. Being head of ranch security is a great honor, but also a dreadful burden. I remembered the chicken house murder. I still didn't have any suspects. Or I had too many suspects. Maybe that was it. Everyone was a suspect. Well, everyone but the milk cow and I had pretty muchly scratched her off the list. And the porcupine, since they only eat trees. But every other creature on the ranch was under the shadow of suspicion. Except Drover. He was too chicken to kill a chicken. When we got home, I trotted up to the chicken house and went over the whole thing in my mind. While I was sitting there, lost in thought, a chicken came up and pecked me on the tail. Scared the fool out of me just for a second. I snarled at her and made her squawk and flap her wings. That's another thing about this job. Every day, every night, you put your life on the line. And for what? A bunch of idiot birds that would just as soon peck you on the tail as tell you good morning. Sometimes you wonder if it's worth it, and all that keeps you going is dedication to duty. In the end, that's what separates the top echelon of cow dogs from the common rubble. Rabble, whatever the word is. Anyway, the dogs that don't give a rip is what I'm saying. Well, I had nothing to work with. No evidence, no case. There wasn't a thing I could do until the killer struck again. I could only hope that me and Drover could catch him in the act. I decided to change my strategy.